What's up, everybody? Welcome to Moving the Goalposts. I am your host, Nick Mara, joined by my co-host, Mike Masala. Mike, how are you now?
Doing well, brother. How are you?
Not so bad. We are also joined by producer extraordinaire, Andrew Meehan. Meehan, what's up?
What's going on? How are we?
Could be better. I would say, for the most part, I'm content. Today was a decent day, but would have been a hell of a lot nicer if the Patriots were still the number one seed in the AFC.
Agreed.
A victory Monday would have been a nice way to start this week off. But unfortunately, New England's 7-game winning streak was snapped on Saturday night against the Indianapolis Colts. They came away with a 27-17 victory over the Patriots. Guys, this is probably the first time since at least the Dallas game, but maybe really the first time all season, that we saw a Patriots team get behind early and have to come back and make a game competitive in the fourth quarter. This is something that we've been talking about for weeks now, that we've yet to see Mac Jones do anything like that in his career, where he has to bring the team back from a deficit in the fourth quarter. And even though he didn't accomplish the task fully, I will say that his performance and his ability to bounce back does give me confidence. And I think that for his first real test in the NFL and trying to bring a team back, close but no cigar, but definitely gives you some hope. Definitely gives you some hope. Masala, what were your impressions in Saturday night's game?
Yeah, I think we touched on it a little bit before we started recording. To me, I think this game comes down to decision-making by the coaches. Aggressiveness, preparation. I think it all comes down to those factors. If you make a couple different decisions, you want to go for it here, or on like the field goal late, if you don't decide to kick a field goal there and you maybe go for it and from the 7-yard line when you kind of need those points. I think it all comes down to that. Mac Jones wasn't great by any stretch. He completed just over 50% of his passes. Those two interceptions were bad. The second one, when he threw in the flat to Bolden, he had Bolden there. He just waited an extra 2 or 3 seconds, and then it was an easy interception. He didn't see Jackson on the first one. It was all over the place offensively. Obviously, not having Damian Harris hurt them. They didn't really commit to the run game as much as this team would have in the past if you had a full stable of backs. And I think they did a great job of doing what they said. They said they were going to make Mac throw the ball, and they did, and it worked out for them. The saddest part for me watching, and then the next day, was realizing that Bill Belichick just got out coached by Frank Reich.
Yeah,
pretty significantly.
It did kind of seem like that. It certainly seemed like Frank Reich got his number once again. Meehan, I don't know if you need to hold on. It's all that processed cheese on the McDouble. Meehan, what were your thoughts on Saturday night's game? Obviously, like I said, this was really Mac Jones's first test in trying to bring his team back. How do you think he did first half of the game, second half of the game?
Better second half. Really didn't show up until the fourth quarter. I don't know. I mean, a lot of these rookies you see this year, you know, the beginning of the season, the end of the season. Take like Zach Wilson, for example, in his first game against the Patriots. Throws one pick, throws two, you know, two becomes three, three becomes four. You didn't really see Mac teeter and kind of lose focus. And that could be, you know, because of the system. That's not even what this argument is going to be, or the point of this conversation, or where I'm going is going to be. Like, I'm not talking about the system that he is in or whatever. This was a pretty big stage, a pretty big game. You're coming off the bye. You've won 7 straight. You've earned where you're at. You took care of business when other teams weren't, and other teams, you know, things were falling into place for you. So for Mac, I just think this was probably his worst game as a rookie. I think this is the game where he hit that rookie wall, but he still didn't even 17 unanswered points. I mean, come on. There's a sign that it can happen. I think if the defense stops Jonathan Taylor from running 67 yards for a touchdown, if Hightower and Hightower mostly overplayed and overplayed that last run, and that kind of just, yeah, it was up to Hightower and McCourty.
I genuinely have no idea that neither one of them, how they didn't make a tackle on that play, because
Hightower's looked slower than he has before all year. He's looked slow.
The hole was open, but they had two guys that were right there. It wasn't even like Taylor had up front. Escape anyone. He just ran by Hightower.
This game was like deja vu. Honestly, we make fun of the Bills for, allowing Damian Harris to run for I forget how long of a touchdown touchdown run that was when
I actually think Bills it was 7 yards.
Regardless, it's kind of like, it just came back. Well, it goes around, comes around. It came back and hit us right in the face. They just got that blocked, but that their third block punt of the season didn't help at all. Now you're down 14-0, which that thing got rifled into the end zone. That was just, it's not even like you stopped them at the one or the whatever. Oh, that thing just rifled right into the end zone. I was saying this Masala to Mara before the show started. I can't really pin this on anybody. It was just an overall crap asset effort by everybody. Coaches down. And I don't know, Mac is saying we didn't have a good week of practice, and it's like, could this team not handle a bye? I'm kind of glad they might not be the first seed now. Maybe they're that team that needs to just keep rolling and keep rolling with that momentum, because they clearly couldn't handle this bye. And I don't want to hear that, oh, we got 5 days off instead of six and this and that, and we had to practice on this day instead of that. That doesn't matter anymore. You won seven straight, you're past that. You can't bitch about how many days you have off and how many you don't. It's crunch time.
I think you bring up a very interesting point. If we're not going to necessarily place the blame on one specific player or one specific coach or anything like that, we don't have to. I mean, I would say if you're going to point the finger at someone, you would point the finger at Belichick. And he even kind of admitted to that during his post-game press conference, and then in his press conference with the press this morning, was apologizing for how he treated everybody after the game on Saturday because he was so bitter. But I don't really put the blame on Belichick. I had this hot take written down as soon as Jonathan Taylor scored that game sealing touchdown, by the way. Is Belichick back on the hot seat? Because it's like, it's one thing to win and keep winning and ride that momentum, and then you've got that momentum stopped because of the bye week. And if you're going into somebody else's home and they're treating it like not really even a playoff game, Indianapolis was treating that game like the Super Bowl. You know, this is a team that the Colts haven't beaten since 2009. So we're going on 12 years since they've even came away with a victory against the Patriots. That's home, away, regular season, postseason. The Patriots were the literal boogeymen for the Colts, and they got that monkey off their back this past weekend. I don't know if it's going to have a long-term effect on New England. I don't think it's going to be the type of loss that lingers and they're not able to bounce back from. But it is a little concerning that this was such a big game. And it was a big game for the Patriots as well. And it didn't seem like they treated it like that. Mike, I don't know if you thought this game was as big as I thought it was.
Yeah, it definitely felt that big. We've had three pretty big tests in recent weeks, including this upcoming week. And I think everybody kind of realized that it just, for some reason, they weren't ready to go. And we all are pretty tuned into the Boston media circuit. We all know, like, there's been talk about practice schedules. There's been talk about, maybe Mac Jones was trying to get a message out from his coach in his press conference. They weren't up for this game. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's the boogeyman factor of Frank Reich. I really don't know what's going on with this team, because their secondary was great against the pass. It's Carson Wentz.
Well, it's some Carson Wentz.
Some people will say what they will about Carson Wentz.
I was literally thinking, by the way, when are we going to get to how Carson Wentz played? Because I want you to defend this guy. But we can talk about that later. But you're right. Yeah, the pass defense was good.
Yeah, the pass defense has been great. And I just don't know how you can't stop the run. Exactly the same question we would have had for the Bills after that game. If you know they're going to run, and everybody did know that going into this game, how can you not stop that? And I think maybe the loss of Kyle Duggar hurts later in the game. It's one guy. You still have Lawrence Guy up the middle. You still have Christian Barmore. You still have Devon Godshaw. You have all of these guys who are like so important to stopping the run and who have been so good at it. And they can't get it done. It made no sense. And that is really the deflating part of it, not to use deflating puns. Right. That's the part that's really disappointing, is that this is a team that I think they could have beaten. I don't think they're a more talented team than the Patriots. I think they're probably right on par. And this is a team you should have won, and you should still be the first seed in the AFC, but you blew it. Whether it wasn't taking things seriously or not practicing hard enough or attending birthdays, I don't know. There was some problem this week that happened, and they need to get on track. And I think it is good that they're playing Buffalo this upcoming week, because if this was a game against like Houston coming up, like you could have let that get away from them, but they know they have to focus right back up. And I would think that Belichick can get them on that same page, but I also would think that he would get them ready off of a bye week. So I'm not really sure what to think right now.
Mian, was this a trap game?
No. I think that I always thought Indianapolis on the come up was, you know, could be that dark horse, sneaky good team. Like you said, I think they had more to play for. It's really a tight race all over the AFC, but especially they were 7-6 coming to this game. They had a lot more to play for. And I think you just have a lot of players, Mac included, because he's a rookie, that have not been in this position before, that have not been in a position of we've won 7 straight. Now we're going into a bye. We've earned it. Things are falling into place for us. We're taking care of business when teams aren't. And you couldn't handle it. I'm treating this game as a reality check. You kind of needed to get your ass whooped on TV. You know, the only game on Saturday, I think this team could have used an ass whooping, and they did, because, you know, I could see someone coming into that locker room and like, okay, now it's back to reality, because now you're playing like at the beginning of the season. You took care of business, and now you couldn't handle the bye.
I think that's a very fair assessment, actually, because the feeling that I get after a game like this is maybe not that much different than the feeling I had. Well, I mean, it is definitely different because they hadn't won in 10 years, but not that different from the Kansas City loss in 2014, where it seemed as though the world was falling, and yet Belichick came away from the end of that game pretty confident in how his team competed and battled and didn't quit. And you can say that about this Patriots team. Like, you get down by 14 points, you get a punt block, they score a touchdown at the end of the first quarter. It's like, pack it in, boys. This just isn't our night. Let's just make sure nobody else gets hurt or gets sick at this point in the game. But give them credit. They battled back. The defense held them to field goals in the second and third quarter. Realistically, like, yeah, you can't take away the 67-yard rush that Taylor had. That is a huge negative against the run defense. But up until that point, outside of the 8-play drive where, yeah, the Colts ran all over the Patriots, I think New England did do a pretty decent job against the run.
Yeah.
It's just, you can do a decent enough job against the run, but if you don't make the big play, it's the same thing as if you do well against the pass. You could, the quarterback could be throwing, you know, guys 15 yards open and he's missing them, or, you know, he's completed 50% of his passes, but all of a sudden fourth down and 12 on the 36-yard line, he finds the guy that's open 40 yards downfield and they end up scoring a touchdown. Like, did you play well against the pass that game, or did you not play well against the pass that game? It's one play that makes the difference. the concerning thing for me, I'm telling you, I have to keep harping back to it, is why weren't they ready to go? And is this something that we now have to be concerned about going forward? Not necessarily that they're going to be coming in cold off of a bye, because I don't know if they're going to be the number one seed at the end of the year. But do we have to worry about this Patriots team not having the awareness to get ready for big games?
I think that that quote from Mac Jones, the first thing he said in any press conference this entire year, I think that really was telling. And if that's something that was told to him by Belichick, hey, this is something you're allowed to say, it's going to get our message across to the players, not even to the media. If that's true, that there are bigger issues going on. And if he's feeling that he needs to get his message out other ways and guys aren't listening, then there's a problem. I don't know what the issue is with special teams specifically, but you can't have three punt blocks. You can't.
Oh, it's
if every other team has one, you have three. It can't happen. And I don't know who's responsible. I didn't rewatch that specific play breakdown from the all 22 angle yesterday. But somebody needs to do something better.
So the early analysis, because I actually was driving home during the first quarter, so I heard the play on the radio, and the early analysis seemed to be that Jakob Johnson missed the block. Yeah. That he kind of whiffed on the block, and that was the free man that got in and was able to block the punt. But I also heard Zolak saying, like, Jake Bailey's got to get the ball off quicker. Like, you're taking way too much time to kick it. Like, you don't have that much time in this game. They're coming after you, so you got to get it out quickly. Mian, talking about the run game for the Colts, obviously this was basically Indianapolis taking a page out of the Patriots book against the Bills from 2 weeks ago. Without Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson only got 10 carries for 36 yards. Really, like, your best rusher, even though he only carried the ball once, was Mac Jones with the 12-yard scramble that he had. 19 carries for 81 yards. They did average 4.3 yards a carry, but I think that Patriots not being able to run consistently really put Jones into a difficult spot where he had to make plays early in the game and he just wasn't able to make them. Yeah. And I think, you know, we saw that at the end of the first half where he throws the interception when they're in the red zone.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead.
So we got 3 minutes left. I don't know if you want to.
I think at a minute we can pause.
Okay. All right.
We'll chew this up. I think for Mac, that first interception was bad. He knew it too. Those are the reads that he's going to get better at making. I anticipate that he will get better at making as it goes. That second interception, that was a hell of a play. Could he have gotten the ball out a little sooner? Yeah, but the defender gunned it to go get that friggin' ball. I mean,
Masala, what did you see on the second interception?
That was the Bolden one you're talking?
Yeah, the one out to the flat almost.
So the way I saw it, and I didn't watch a replay of it, this was just my live thoughts, is he had Bolden by like a step or two, and he could have thrown that out and he would have made that play, but he waited until he closed. And Bolden's not the fastest guy out there, so that quick second of separation is going to be the most you're going to get. And instead he waited to get that ball out there. I don't know if he was looking down the field and then look back to Bolden or what the reason was, but in my mind, I thought if he got that ball out sooner, that's a completion, not an interception.
Yeah,
for sure. I will say that Hunter Henry does seem like he's finding himself in the Patriots offense now. Had 6 receptions for 77 yards and a couple of scores.
He has 7 touchdowns on the year. It's tied for second with Pat Freiermuth, just one behind Dawson Knox from the Bills. Like, he is starting to become that guy that we kind of expected him to be. I don't think that he's going to be a guy who makes like game breaking plays, but he's a consistent catcher in the middle of the field, especially in the red zone, that big body, like ability to box guys out. He's exactly what they needed over the last few years. And I'm glad that they're finally getting it to him, but is it a matter of that or a matter of the Colts are terrible against tight ends? I think they were like, gave up like the 6th most fantasy points to tight ends going into yesterday. Or the fact that they have nobody else to throw to at points. Like, Kendrick Bourne wasn't getting involved in that game yesterday. Nelson Agholor eventually went out with the concussion after, I don't know, 1,000 times that their safety headhunted that game. And N'Keal Harry and then Jacoby Myers. Like, these are not elite names. If you look around and you see your best option is Hunter Henry, that's who you're going to go to. And I think that's what kind of what he's become. I don't know if he's, like I said, I don't think he's a game changer, but I think he's their best option right now.
Mian, what do you, are you happy with the addition of Hunter Henry? Do you think that it's worked out, that he's going to be a good pickup or a good addition? That what I'm basically saying is, at the beginning of the season, it didn't really seem like either Henry or Smith was really producing that much, but Henry seems to have caught on recently. So
yeah,
do we now look at that contract as being a little bit more justifiable now?
I mean, we saw this in that 7-game win streak. You know, they had what, 5 games, I want to say, where they had 5 straight touchdowns together. I think he had 2 against Cleveland. So we're seeing that relationship start to build up. And to Mike's point, yeah, it's, as of right now, that's like your number one target in the red zone. I think in the receiving court, you're still one guy short. I don't think Agholor is clearly not cutting out to be the guy that he should be, or that they needed him to be. I think Bourne is good. Myers, a crucial drop in that game. But Bourne and Myers, I think if you get that one guy that can really open up things, that's going to elevate their game too. So, but I mean, it's progressing. It's progressing a lot more than, I don't know what Smith's deal is. You know, we were kind of, at the beginning of the season, you were expecting that Henry might have not even been around for middle of the season, or even right now. There was question about how healthy he can stay. I know, I think he showed up on the injured list a couple of times, but knock on wood, he's staying healthy. And Smith, I mean, Smith is just kind of like a no-show for the last couple of games. I know they tried a couple of things with him running in the last couple of games, but, you know, he had that one acrobatic catch against the Bills where, you know, you were throwing into 50-mile-per-hour winds. But, I mean, hey, it's only trending up, so it's good. I think if you just get that one receiver that can elevate their levels, it's, you might have a little bit more of a complete offense. I don't know how you're going to address that in the offseason. That's a different bridge to cross. Right now, they were operating well enough with what they have on board, but it's just, it wasn't enough the other night. And he threw two good touchdown passes. I think the second one was even better than the first to Henry. The relationship is trending up. No problems there.
I do agree that things are trending up. They're trending in the right direction. Henry seems to be the guy, so to speak, in an offense that doesn't, like you guys have said, doesn't have a lot of playmakers. At least he seems to be somewhat dependable, and that connection continues to not just work, but it's getting better. Mm. On the other side of the ball, how do we feel about Matthew Judon over the last couple of weeks? I think, you know, the numbers are not there, but not that numbers always have to be there for defensive players in order for them to make an impact. But I've just noticed, based on the eyeball test, it seems like he's, not that he's less engaged in these games, but teams are doing a much better job of focusing on him and taking him out of the game, having him be less impactful. Misala, are you seeing similar things? And if you are, what does Judon need to do to get back to being the game wrecker that he was, or as close to a game wrecker as he was at the beginning and middle of the season?
I would say I've seen a little bit of it. Like, I think teams are definitely keying in on him more. You're not seeing him get as many one-on-one opportunities as he was in the past. I think for him to be successful, you have to show that you're going to get pressure with other places. And they haven't been able to do that really on the other side recently. In past weeks and a little bit this week, you had some from Dietrich Wise. You haven't had really anything from Winovich this year. Uche has been pretty much a nothing for a majority of the year. It's been just him and Barmore up the middle. That's really it. And when you can key in on a guy or two, that's going to be the big impact. They're not going to be going out getting those 2-3 sack games every time. I do still think he's impacting the game by taking on two guys or even pushing the quarterback back. I think the big question has been, in his pursuit of the quarterback, in maybe not this past week, but in recent weeks, he's been going past the quarterback, which is always something they say you never want to do. I don't know if that is impacting. Maybe he's being told, hey, you can't do that anymore. And maybe he's thinking about it a little too much, and maybe that's impacting him. But I do still think he has been impactful, just the numbers aren't popping up as much as they were before.
Mian, are you concerned at all about Judon?
No, I mean, I think it's, I don't want to say it's really more of his engagement. I mean, the guy would have more sacks if, you know, he wasn't held as much as he probably has been in the entire season. But no, I think it's more so teams are just kind of like keying in on that's that one piece that we got to take away from the defense. As far as that fronts, your defensive line is, you know, you've seen Godshout come up as of recent. He's made, you know, he's kind of been on a blip on the radar here and there. Barmore is, you know, he's been a great rookie, defensive rookie so far. He's trending up. Lawrence Guy is, you know, again, making plays where he can at least. So it's kind of like, where are things going to open up for those guys? In terms of linebackers, Collins is making plays. Van Noy is making plays. I think Van Noy, this has probably got to be one of his better years as a Patriot, at least in my opinion. Hightower's looking slow. So when it goes back to Judon, I think it's just that's obviously the number one piece on that defense of, you know, that front seven where it's like, that's what we got to take away. So it's more so teams are just taking away the one crucial thing. And I think he'll still have those opportunities and those openings where he'll be able to get to the quarterback and make a little noise. I think next week it's going to be huge. I mean, just get after Allen and shake him up in, you know, on home turf. But yeah, I'm not really, when you said engagement, nah, I think the guy's engaged. This is his best year as a defensive player because he's playing for one of the greatest defensive minds. So, I mean, middle of the season, correct me if I'm wrong, there were defensive player of the year conversations, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, no.
Which not far from.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, we've gone from him being a defensive player of the year candidate to now not really making an impact on the game.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's an individual thing. I agree with you guys. I think that teams are certainly scheming things up differently to try and combat what was the strength of the Patriots defense during that winning streak was the pass rush. I mean, as good as the secondary has been this year, let's be honest, this is not a very talented secondary. J.C. Jackson, great ball skills, but his coverage skills, we all know that they come into question. Jalen Mills is your number two corner. We wanted Jalen Mills to be playing safety. And now in this game, you had Kyle Duggar get thrown out for fighting with Michael Pittman. So you were stuck with basically McCourty and Adrian Phillips as your safeties. But McCourty even seems like he's taken not just like a step back, but multiple steps back. I don't think this team, this defense, the team definitely, but the defense in particular is going to be able to stop anyone if Matt Judon is not effective.
Sucks to say, but I think for guys like Hightower and McCourty, I think it's going to be that time, man. Hightower's looked slow. McCourty has looked slow points. And it sucks because, especially McCourty, with leadership-wise, I mean, there's the only other guy that comes closest to that is Matthew Slater. So in terms of leadership and kind of being able to hone in and reel everybody back into perspective, like I can only imagine what someone like Slater or McCourty had to say after that one. Like I said, treat it as a reality check. Like it sucks. I think it's for those guys, you're getting old on defense and it's, you know, it's going to be time to start looking elsewhere. And it's fine. I mean, you got young talent coming up in that defense. There's hope in guys like Barmore, like Kyle Duggar. But yeah,
I still like Uche.
It's him.
Ronnie Perkins was activated off of injured reserve only to then be placed back on injured reserve. I don't even understand how the injured reserve works in the NFL anymore. Back in the day, didn't it used to be once you were on, you were done for the year?
Yeah, it's now you have 3 games minimum, and they can use that as many times as you want. It's more of like a COVID type rule. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Than anything else.
Makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Well, COVID. All right. Let's talk. Let's do a real quick COVID segment on how COVID seems to be screwing up everything again. Every day this week, except for Wednesday and Friday, there's going to be at least one NFL football game on TV because COVID has forced everybody to reschedule. Oh, wow. Grant's having a kid.
Hey.
Ooh. Sorry. Someone that me and Mike know, a guy that we used to work with, he just texted me saying that he's pregnant.
That he's pregnant?
Unlike Carson
Wentz. His wife is pregnant. Yeah, unlike Carson Wentz. Hey, what was I saying?
Fuck, come on. Hold on. They had two kids.
What was I just saying before I got distracted? Oh, COVID. Talking about COVID, screwing everything up. Do you guys like having multiple NFL football games throughout the week, or are you kind of like, just keep it to Sundays and the occasional Thursday and Monday?
I would say if I'm interested in watching it, like I would rather have them all on one day just so that I can sit there and I can get it done throughout the week. Not that it's not enjoyable, but just take the whole day off and just sit there and watch football. But I do also kind of like having sprinkled in here and there. Like, I wouldn't want this every week, but if it was a couple weeks a year, they already have this thing where you get some Saturday games at the end of the year or the double Monday nights that they do every year. I kind of like that, but not as an every week thing. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I like what the NFL is doing. Switching it back to let's test, basically summing it up, let's look for just symptoms, because that's how everybody else operates. You know, I don't get tested every day at work. I mean, there are some professions that do, there are some that don't. Me personally, obviously, I don't have to get tested every day I go into work or every week. So just look for the asymptomatic things. I mean, because like if all three of us were in a room right now, one, two, or all of us could be asymptomatic. You never know it. You know, it sucks. I mean, it kind of feels like we were back, you know, in March of 2020, where it's just everything was getting shut down. I don't think the whole world is going to get put, you know, on hold again. Because if we're speaking just in terms of like COVID overall, whatever it's called, Omicron variant. Is that what it is?
It sounds like a Power Ranger thing.
Sounds like
something from Viltrum.
it's peaking, I guess, in South Africa, where it started. I believe it started there. So it's peaking, and it's kind of means that, you know, all right, it's hospitalizations are starting to go down or are steady where they're at. So I don't think everything's going to get put on hold again, but it sucks. It does suck.
Are you a fan of the multiple NFL games throughout the week, though? Like, if this was a normal thing where they scheduled games throughout the week?
Yes and no. I mean, there's no games that really I'm like stand out. And I'm like, because like look at today. Like, if you had full healthy rosters tonight for Cleveland and the Raiders, it would mean something. What do I care now, though? Like I said, Cleveland's in the hunt, but I think they're a fraud team. And the Raiders are the Raiders. They start off good and then they, you know, start to suck. So what do I care about that game? There's just like, yeah, great. There's more football. Cool. I'll watch, but I'm not going to like, doesn't steal my interest a whole lot.
I also like the idea of limiting the games to just kind of happening on like one or two days throughout the week. And I think it's a perfect example. If you look at the slate of games today, not just because COVID has affected the rosters, but the teams themselves are not that great. Like, why are the Chicago Bears constantly playing in primetime? They're terrible.
I thought the whole objective at the beginning of the season was to not have to reschedule games. So if you can't field a team or play because of COVID, you lose. That's it.
Well, Roger Goodell came out and said that the Omicron variant has caused a necessary change to rules that were established before the season or something. I don't know. You're right, though. The NFL is so inconsistent on what it says it's going to do versus what it actually does. So
yeah,
who knows?
I don't know. At one point, I think we just got to nip it in the butt, and like, because COVID isn't just going to poof and pop away. So are you going to test players for the rest of the existence of the NFL every freaking year? At some point, we just got to nip it in the bud and live with it. And I'm not trying to say, you know, like, whatever, like, if people die or like, what, that's not what I'm trying to get at. It's just, it's, again, test. Nobody else in the country tests just to test, unless I think if you're a doctor or a nurse, okay, that's the exception. But like I said, I let my boss know if I have symptoms, and then I go about my business there, because I can walk into work tomorrow and I could be asymptomatic and you never friggin' know it.
I had a sneezing fit last week. I got home from practice, took a shower, and my nose was all red. And I was having like a sneezing fit, and I got so nervous that I was getting sick. It was really just because I was cleaning my room earlier in the day, and like all the dust was like.
You're one of those guys that like around. Looks up stuff on WebMD when you start to get sick. I am.
Like a hypochondriac?
Yeah. Yeah.
How many times have you diagnosed yourself with cancer?
Never. I've never taken it that far.
Oh, you haven't? That's like the first thing that pops up, though, is here's why you're going to die.
Right, right.
Coughing, yeah. Number one link. Everybody knows.
Yeah. Yep. Because I'm like, I'm the same way, too. If I get the flu, like, that's it. I'm going. I'm out. Like, just
down for the count.
Then I just end up having a stuffy nose, and I'm fine.
Hydrate. Lots of fluids.
OJ.
Antihistamines. OJ. Yep. OJ.
Vitamin. You know what? Holistic health mindset. Vitamin D. You get COVID, vitamin D.
Vitamin D. Absolutely. 100%. And what's the best source of vitamin D? Do you guys really not know?
No, I don't sunlight. Know. I don't
the
know.
Sun? Okay. Yeah,
was, the sun.
I'm very bad at my vitamins. I don't, you could have told me that was B or A. I would have had no idea.
Yeah. No, it's.
I thought he was going for something dirty there, so I just kept my mouth shut.
Oh, no.
That's how far my head is up the gutter.
I would actually say that gives more credit. It's more of an indictment on me than it is on you that you thought I was going to go somewhere else with talking about the greatest source of vitamin D. Anyway, Patriots are now 9-5. They are the second seed in the conference. One game behind Kansas City at 10-4. With three games to play, where do we think the Patriots are going to finish up? And I know there's obviously 3 weeks left and we're going to have this conversation again, but as of right now, how do you think New England is going to be able to bounce back, and where do you think they're going to be at the end of the regular season?
No lower than the third seed.
Okay.
I think you
definitely still win the division then.
Yeah. I think that it's a hat and t-shirt. It's a big hat and t-shirt game on Sunday. Jacksonville, not worried about. Miami, I don't want to say I'll be surprised if they lose that game. I won't be surprised if they lose that game, because just historically we suck in Miami at the end of the year. But yeah, I mean, I think you got to win. I don't want to say I'm not bought in anymore, but if you want to regain my full confidence, you got to win out. You got to take care of business. And it could start on Sunday. That could be a big win. But I think they will be, I don't think they'll be the one seed. I think they'll be the second or the third.
Mike, where do you think the Patriots are going to finish now?
I think they're 5 or 6 seed. I don't
really?
Think winning, I don't think they're winning the division.
Oh, who's going to come up more and win? Who's going to surpass them?
It would besides be the Bills.
Kansas City.
I think the Bills are going to come up and get
I mean, looking at the schedule, I don't agree with you, Mike, but I do see two losses on that schedule that are very, very possible. And because they're against division opponents, that's going to severely damage your shot at finishing with the proverbial hats and t-shirts.
Right. Like if we're going into this weekend, and if the Patriots win this game, they have the division. If they lose this game, they're tied with the Bills, but they have the tiebreaker, correct? So that if they lose this game, I think it's a toss up. In my mind, they're losing this game. It's basically what it comes down to. I don't think they're going to win this upcoming week. I think the Bills are a better team, and they have a lot more to prove than the Patriots coming into this week. Miami, like you said, bad things happen down in Miami. It's a different quarterback, so who knows? But bad things happen against that team. And they're a team on the come up.
Sure they are.
But again, I mean, Jesus, they beat the freaking Jets. And the Jets were winning for what? The majority of the first half? Wasn't it 24-14 at one point?
I they beat the Jets, but I give them credit for winning seven straight games. Like, they haven't lost since
against freaking October. Who, though? Against who? Yeah,
they're beating the teams in front of them.
Yeah, same teams that the Patriots have had to play.
Yeah, but
actually,
the, oh my God, the
better
Patriots
teams
have
than the
better
Patriots
competition.
Have had to play. No, same teams. Look at
Hold
the schedule.
On. Hold on. Hold on.
There
There's
are
no
two
way.
Games. There are three games on the Dolphins' schedule that would be different opponents than the Patriots. The Dallas Cowboys for the Patriots, the Cleveland Browns for the Patriots, and the Chargers for the Patriots. Those are the three teams that Miami will not play this year. Everything else is the exact same.
Okay, Houston. Okay. Beat the Jets. Beat the Giants. Panthers. Okay. But I don't see anybody that stands out. Look, the Ravens are frauds. They didn't beat the Bills. I'm worried more about being in Miami than I am playing Miami. I don't
about
know why.
Miami. Yeah.
I don't know why. But I just don't see, like, yes, seven games. Okay. Like, I get the whole win streak. But nobody really stands out to me on that schedule that's like, wow, they beat them. It's like with the Patriots, it's like, okay, you beat the Chargers. You beat now Miami did also beat Carolina. Carolina's defense, I don't want to say they're underappreciated, but
I think Carolina's defense should be better than it is, but
I think
it is very good.
I just think the suckiness of their offense overshadows everything about that team.
Well, they lost their first round pick, right? JC Horn. That was like the week before they
yes.
ended up getting Gilmore.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's the best team you're going to face in the last 3 weeks is Buffalo. It's a playoff game practically next Sunday. Jacksonville, I'm not really worried about. That's at home. But I'm not really worried about Miami. More worried about them just going down there and shooting
right.
themselves in the foot like they have in the past
right.
in Miami and like they have practically all year.
I think Mike is right on, though, with his take that this division is far from over.
Oh, yeah. I don't disagree with that.
And losing a game like that game and losing a game like the one against the Bills on Sunday when you're at home and you basically are in a win and in situation. That's going to do so much for morale for the Bills, and it's going to do so much for anti-morale. I don't even know if that's really a word for the Patriots. Like, talk about two teams that will then be going in completely different directions. Yeah, I could see Buffalo having the upward trend if they win that game, and I would probably put them as the favorite to win the division, even though the teams would be tied.
Right.
Right? Buffalo is 8-6 right now, right?
Yeah, they would be tied with them having the Patriots having the tiebreaker.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, I was feeling a lot better about this Patriots team a week ago.
I trust the Patriots coming off a loss more than I do the Bills coming off a win. Like, I just think there's, in terms sure. of coaching, I just don't trust the Bills. I just don't. I mean, and we should be lucky this game's going to be at Foxborough on Sunday. We should. I trust that they're going to come back after a loss and say to themselves, we look like complete shit. Everybody thinks we're back to square one now. Like, I think the message... I'm hoping the message will get through, and I just Sean McDermott I don't trust. I just don't. And honestly, are the Bills paying off all these channels that are covering them on game day to like not show Sean McDermott on the camera flipping absolute shit? I mean, seriously,
I still like Sean McDermott a little bit.
I don't. Me I think
too.
He's an ass.
I think he's kind of a dick, but I like him as a coach.
He's not a bad coach, but I still think he's an idiot. He's just, you know, just, but hey, it's kind of like deja vu this week. It's like what goes around comes around. Now we,
it really is. It really is the way that the schedule played out. You were going to be playing the Bills 2 out of 3 games and be pretty much separated by about a month in between. And again, was hoping to feel better going into the game, but this is, it's turned, your postseason starts now. Much like Indianapolis was treating Saturday night like it was a playoff game,
yeah,
you need to treat this Sunday like a playoff game. And I would go so far as to say, why don't you treat Jacksonville like a playoff game as well? Because if you don't, you probably will end up losing to Miami in Miami.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, do you guys have any final takes on the Patriots?
Make sure they don't call Steven Jackson for that last game.
Yes. Hopefully Damian Harris will be healthy.
Yeah. I didn't think that was a huge loss. I mean, maybe you can get the same amount of production out of Stevenson. Maybe not as much, but not a worse guy you could have behind it. Not the worst guy that you can have behind Harris. I mean, I don't think they're using him correctly sometimes.
Better hope COVID doesn't run through this team because they already put four guys on the list today.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look, COVID's ruining everything again. But who knows? Maybe they'll cancel the game and then schedule it for like week 19 or something because they'll have to, you know, make sure everybody has their cake and eats it too in the NFL.
You know what? I don't hope McDaniels has his foot in another team right now. Kind of seems like it. Kind of seems like we're gearing towards that, whether it's Chicago or Jacksonville.
So this year, he's allowed to interview in the final 2 weeks of the regular season, right?
Yep.
Which I think will probably make the transitions a little bit easier. But to be honest with you, I don't know if he leaves. I think that he's kind of afraid to leave New England now.
I mean, his next head coaching gig is going to be his last if it sucks. I don't think he won't get another one after that if it turns into what, you know, Denver turned into.
At least not in the NFL. I mean, if he wants to go to college, maybe someone will give him a head coaching job in college. He's an offensive guy. College is all about offense nowadays. But yeah, McDaniels is an interesting piece of the puzzle because I think he's done a pretty good job with Jones so far this year. Last game, the play calling was probably a little conservative. In some areas at least, but I think this has been a good year for McDaniels and he's probably a prime candidate for a lot of jobs. So if he wants one, he should be able to get one. He should. Anything else? Nothing else.
Play pissed. Play pissed off because you got freaking pantsed on Saturday night. So
by the way, a couple of months ago, I bought Madden, like a physical copy. Because I was using the digital trial and I have a 30% off coupon that came with it on NFLshop.com. So I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's perfect. I haven't invested in new Patriots merchandise in a while and there's some new players on this team. Maybe now I can start that next generation. Go online. Guess what you cannot find on the internet?
A Matthew Judon jersey?
Or a Mac Jones jersey in any color.
Yeah, I believe it. It's everybody coming back to the Patriots now that we don't suck. I mean, hey, at least we can talk like we're, you know, that we're 9-5. Let's be thankful for that this holiday season.
Oh, let's do a Christmas segment.
Oh, God. What?
No, it's too spur of the moment. Although I did have a question pop up in my mind earlier today. If you could celebrate Christmas with four different characters from Christmas movies, who would you select?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I think I would probably take what's his name from the Santa Claus?
One of the elves are you talking about?
Tim Allen?
No. Yeah, it's one of the elves. Who's the head elf? He's like
S.
Samuel. He's like 17, and everybody else is like 12.
Doesn't it begin with an S? Isn't it Sam?
I don't think so. Sam. Is it Sam? No, that's Scott Calvin is Tim Allen's character. Him, though, because he seems like he'd be like maybe not the guy that would be the life of the party, but has that dry sense of humor that would just come up with the right things to say at the right time. But you definitely have to take a Santa Claus from some movie, you know. Uncle Eddie, I think, would be funny from Christmas Vacation.
The chaos. I would just sit back and watch the chaos ensue with that guy. Who else?
Cindy Lou Who from How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
I was going to take Max from How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Max would be a good one. Max would be a good one. Max would be a great one.
Also, who's Jim Carrey's older? Grinch way better than the regular, the old Grinch, right?
100% right? Better.
All right, well, yeah. Cool. Who's the cougar who that lives in the Whoville? You know, the
Martha May Huvier.
Yeah, Martha May Huvier.
Yeah, that's a good one. And you know what else just got me thinking of is Mrs. Claus from the Santa Claus 2. Like, she's a smoke when she's a principal in that movie.
Can I take the store clerk from Christmas Vacation?
That's another good one.
She's probably 60 now.
I'll take Billy Bob Thornton's girlfriend from Bad Santa.
I think the elf from Bad Santa.
Elf from Bad Santa. You can't trust the elf from Bad Santa, though. That's the dangerous thing. A lot of great Christmas characters out there. Underrated Christmas characters, even. Like, I think I would probably have fun hanging out with Russ from Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
Oh. Is it Bethel? What's her name? Grace. She died 30 years ago. I'd hang out with her and her husband, Lewis. That's way more than four people now. Like, I've ruined this question.
You have a full house full of people.
Is your house on fire, Clark? Is this the airport?
I love riding in cars. Oh, dear,
wrapped your damn cat. That's a
blessing.
That is a great, great movie.
Well, if that's everything, I think that's going to do it for another episode of Moving the Goalposts, episode 68, a Jaromir Jagr 68.
There you go.
A Ryan O'Callaghan 68.
Again,
Ryan O'Callaghan, I always think of him and Rich Ornberger as being the exact same person. So maybe Rich Ornberger was the 68 that I'm thinking of. A late Adrian Waddle 68 is another one. There's got to be some other ones out there. 68, popular 68s.
I don't think I got a ton of them.
Damn.
68. I'm going to look up one from the Red Sox just so we have our one. Jose Iglesias, rookie number 68. Matt Barnes was 68 for three seasons.
That should have been one that we knew. Yep, that was a good one. 68, Matt Barnes. It's going to do it for episode 68 of Moving the Goalposts. As always, we want to make sure that you guys are following along on social media. I'm available at NickMara94. Masala can be found on Twitter at Mike_Masala. Mian, catch him on Twitter at Mian_A_83. Mike, till next time.
Later, brother.
Peace.